This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Thursday night, yeah, it's a Busted Pencils night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The number's 855-752-4842. Johnny, yeah, you know, every so often one of us has to do something responsible, you know, family business, and Johnny's doing some family business tonight, but producer Anya is in the house with me tonight. Anya, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Nothing psychs me up more for a show than... Hey, just wondering, would you be able to guest host tonight? And it's kind of like, well, I'll be there, so.
Well, now, according to the text you wrote back, it was like, heck yeah.
Yeah, no, I am excited. I'm excited. The nerves are getting the better of me off the top of the show, but I am excited to bust some pencils of my own. Oh, exciting.
Wait, you have nerves?
What? All the time.
I'm serious. Really?
Oh, I'm a deeply anxious person, Tim. I'm just also,
okay, well,
very good at faking it.
Talking about that, no, I'm a very, anxious to the point where, yeah, it's real. I mean, but doing stuff like this is where my anxiety goes away, and warming up to it, it actually calms my anxiety too, which is weird, right? But leave me alone with nothing to do. And man, I can worry up a storm then.
Yeah, you can make a lot of anxieties out of nothing,
oh,
I bet.
Oh,
yeah, me too.
I can create all kind of false scenarios about catastrophic events that are never going to occur.
You don't even need the molehill to get started on the mountain. Oh, you can just look at a flat plain and go, you know what would be really good here? A big mountain.
Yeah, I mean, it's just right away, but but nothing to be anxious about. You know, we're here. If any of the callers are out there, 855-752-4842 is the number. Check us out. You know, we're getting a lot of people watching on the X. Man, I don't like saying that, but
I don't either.
Yeah, it's just, but X, what used to be Twitter. People tuning in and watching the feed, you know, the video feed, Mrs. K's episode, over 700 views on the X, which is like, okay, this is cool. This is great. You know, wherever you can bust your pencils, we're happy, you know. Civic Media Facebook page, the YouTube Busted Pencils page, the Busted Pencils X page, wherever, put it out there, you know. And if you're in your car, tuning on in the radio, whatever radio station that is, if you're in Hayward, if you're in Madison, if you're in Waukesha, you're covered if you're in your car. And if you're not, you can also then have that Civic Media app on you, which never, never goes down, never allows you to be without your favorite Civic Media show. So, wow. Did I get the promos okay there on you?
I think you did a good job. Yeah.
Okay. And I wasn't even nervous.
No, you didn't sound nervous. It sounded great.
So, Anya, last night, Educators Amplified every Wednesday, we had Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, and really talking about the woeful state of teaching in Wisconsin, came around to really talking about the reality that, you know what, a good, 40% of teachers within 6 years are out, 15% of teachers are contemplating some form of, I ain't coming back. Enrollment in teacher education, which is interesting when you read the DPI, enrollment is actually up a little bit, but the number of those people then who complete teacher education and then become teachers is down. So people go to school, they're signing up to be teachers, and then they're graduating, they're getting their teaching license, and then they're going, yeah, I don't think so. Before they even get there.
And that's so hard because I think that speaks to exactly what some of y'all were talking about last night with maybe teaching school isn't accurately preparing our young teachers if they can get through 4 or 5 years of an undergrad only to face 6 months in school and go, oh my gosh, like this is too much. I either don't have the skills for handling this aspect or I don't have the wherewithal to put up with whatever it is they're finding outside of school. Yeah, that's
It's right to think that, you know, upwards of 30%, right, of new graduates with their new license are saying, yeah, I don't even want to start. I can't do it. And so it's like, what is it that in their teacher education program and what have they seen? And I think what they have seen is that they've seen the inside of schools.
Yep.
And they've seen classrooms. And again, and the conditions. And this is what Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna are talking about. Teaching is awesome. It's wonderful. People want to do it. Teacher Tessa, who was featured in the article, you know, who quit, says, you know, it's not because I didn't like teaching, and it's the conditions in which you do that. And so the reality is that as we're training teachers now, the conditions are obviously toxic enough that even while you're learning to be a teacher, you're downloading going, man, I don't know when I'm done if I really want to come here. That's frightening. Well, continuation of that story. Hey, what data from four states about teacher shortages says? Well, it says right now, recent figures illustrate how K-12 leaders are working from state to state to address the challenge with no one-size-fits-all solution. Just read a little bit here. State data highlights the persistent challenge teacher shortages continue to pose in Illinois, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, the state's Department of Public Instruction finds teachers are exiting the state's workforce at an alarming rate. That's quote, according to the report released Thursday, that analyzes educator retention data. 4 out of 10 new teachers leave the state profession completely within their first 6 years of teaching. On top of that, just 68% of the students who earned a degree in education go on to work. What's happening, though, to combat this? Well, they don't say anything about what's actually happening in Wisconsin except to say it ain't good. But from Illinois, they're saying right here that there's a potential. There's been a 3% increase because superintendents are making the conditions in classrooms more compatible.
Okay.
Compatible. You're making the conditions in classrooms compatible, Andra, and teachers are loving that combat. You know.
You guys said you couldn't fight this fight anymore, so we made it more fightable. Get back in there and
compatible.
Huh? No. Okay.
They made it so that it's a place, at least according to the superintendents, that teachers appreciate being again, and they've seen a 3% increase in retention, is what they're saying in Illinois. February, Mississippi Department of Education doesn't really say anything other than they actually had an increase of 182 vacancies from the year before. They had 2,775 teacher vacancies. They're now up another 182. Pennsylvania, though, here's what they're doing in Pennsylvania. One solution. Okay, so this is what we want to try to talk about first half of the show. If there's a solution, and I'm going to start sharing them, but that's, you know, you're out there listening right now. If you have a solution to the teacher shortage, we want to hear from you. We want you to give us a call. We want to know what the solution is. 855-752-4842. Wisconsin, because there's nothing in the news saying that there's any solutions being present. Let's see what Pennsylvania is doing. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro signed into law a $10 million statewide educator pipeline support grant. Eligible student teachers will receive $10,000 with an additional $5,000 available for those in high need area programs. Yeah, though they got to teach after they're done for 3 years in Pennsylvania in their teaching certification. So Anya, understand this is that so student teaching is that last thing people do before they graduate college. It's where they go in and they're in a classroom. When I did it, it's essentially you pay money to work your butt off for an entire semester as a teacher under another teacher teaching you how to be a teacher, right? And you pay tuition for that because that's your last semester. You're earning 14 to 17 credits in student teaching. It's been, though, put out as this is one of the obstacles to increasing the teachers out there, because there are a lot of people who want to become a teacher that can't afford to literally work for nothing. Because while you're student teaching, you can't then hold down a job at the same time either. And so they've said, hey, so Pennsylvania is saying, guess what? How about we give you 10 grand if you student teach? Anya, what do you say?
Well, I don't want to act like I'm turning my nose up at 10 grand. I would never. That's a really big chunk of money. However, that is so similarly to what either Hallie or Joanna said last night about sign-on bonuses. This is not going to change teacher retention. This changes teacher retention in that for 10 or 15 grand, you're having a young person sign on to a 3-year contract. They can't quit for the next 3 years. So your retention will look pretty good, I bet. But this won't change the internal machinations of that young person who after 3 years is going, I got to get out of this state. Mm. I'll say this is unique, Tim. You've worked with kids in Pennsylvania. I have also worked with kids in Pennsylvania. I worked in Pennsylvania for 3 months at the worst summer camp I'd ever been to. So I specifically relate to this specific topic, saying certain high need areas are going to get 5 grand more. Between Philadelphia and also rural parts of Pennsylvania, I saw a lot of different kinds of high need area. And I'm really concerned about how far 5 grand will go in Philly. How far would 5 grand go in Harrison or Harrisburg, whatever it was called?
Harrisburg.
Yeah. It's concerning to say the least.
See, and this is a step. This is a step in acknowledging what you say, the hurdles. This
for
might
sure.
be an this could be an attractor for people who said, you know what, I wanted to be a teacher. I just couldn't afford student teaching because I can't afford to quit my job and do my student teaching. But so now you're saying, okay, I can quit my job because I'm getting $10,000. And typically then what that means is when I'm done, then I'll become a teacher and then I'll start collecting my wages. So therefore it's potentially doable. What it doesn't say, and we've talked about this though too, and you say, is the tuition you're paying, you're still paying. So if tuition is $12,000, you're actually getting a $10,000 tuition stipend, not really getting $10,000 in your paycheck for pocket money to use during the semester. Although it's an incentive, and it sounds very similar to what we were talking about with Western Michigan University. And 3 years ago, we were talking about in Austin Peay, recognizing the hurdles, the financial commitment it takes to becoming a teacher. It's a step in the right direction. Maybe potentially even looking at the idea of a teacher apprenticeship. Well, let's see what teacher apprenticeships have to say. More Busted Pencils. The number's 855-752-4842. What's your solution to the teacher shortage? Back in a minute. Yeah, all night. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded all night. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, you know, give him the night off. Producer Anya sitting in, filling in. How are the nerves doing, though, Producer Anya? Now, have they eased?
We're getting there, yeah. I'm feeling the shakes are coming down a bit. We're getting there, yeah.
Oh, okay, good, good. Well, you had a nice, though, when I was talking about student teaching, to make that potentially, you know, understandable outside, you were like, oh, is it kind of like, give what was your example?
Well, I realized I kind of went off on the sign-on bonuses part. But as a young person, what this immediately brings to mind is every other form of unpaid internship that was pitched to you. I was really, really lucky in college that an internship that I did is like more of a work study placement. I got paid because the school and the institution I was working for both helped out. But normally with internships, you are not receiving any compensation. And
right.
if it's an internship somewhere like, you know, my friends in communications went and worked at a newspaper or a fashion magazine or something, it's like you have to afford getting there. You have to afford the clothing, the packed lunch, it's literally pricing so many people my age out of being able to work, the unpaid internship.
Right.
Or like you compared this 10 grand figure, unless your schooling is well under 10 grand. This is just a rebate, really, more than payment, unfortunately.
And she said, I mean, I think that's a great comparison, too, to say, you know, an unpaid internship. So if you're wondering about student teaching, yeah, student teaching was the grand unpaid internship. It was your whole last semester, 15 weeks, starting Mondays at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you were there till 4 or 5 o'clock at night. And you did that every single day. I mean, because you and it's a great experience when you're becoming a teacher. It is absolutely, to me, essential. In fact, some other shows, we've even wondered if 15 weeks is too short a time, you know, and in fact, we've talked about other programs, but it is, it's intense. And so if you're working a part-time job and all of a sudden you can't now, okay, so Pennsylvania, 10 grand, 5 grand for high need areas. What does high need mean? Well, yeah, it could mean geographically in hard staff places within Pittsburgh, within Harrisburg, within Philadelphia. Also mean high need areas like special education, math, science, right? And so there's a little bit more of an incentive there. Yeah, but there's a part to this, though, that you say, is that a solution to the teacher shortage? I like what Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie said. Well, what do you, you know, shortage, are we talking about just loading up the front end of this? Because if we're just talking about bringing more and more new bodies, what are we doing about the people who are leaving? And so, you know, if 4 out of every 10 teachers leaves in 6 years or less, right? Loading more people in, and if they still leave at that certain rate, you're not fixing anything. So, right. So, I mean, that's that retention rate, Anya.
It's the difference between, I'm sorry, are you trying to win the war or refill the barracks? Like, there are two different approaches. Are we trying to work on a solution right now that leaves us and our schools better off in 10 years? Or are we trying to stave off somebody leaving for another 6 years by replacing them with someone? I think, unfortunately, this part, my hope is that this extra money would pull folks to places they otherwise wouldn't pick. And through having really great experiences, they choose to stay there. That is the part of this that is a solution. The money on its own, if the money leads you somewhere where you're still being talked down to, still being left behind, still being left with no support or supplies, I sense probably 3 or 6 or a year in, you're thinking about heading out of at least out of Pennsylvania.
Well, so you're there. Well, you know, so update or not an update, but what's going on in Pennsylvania with that? Well, since the applications for the program opened just last week, the state has received over 4,500 applications as of Friday. So
that's
okay.
Really good.
But that is good. Great incentive. So again, but what we don't want to do is that, you know, going back to my when I misspoke and called it combat. But if we're just filling replacements to send to the combat, knowing that the casualty rate is going to be exceedingly high. Okay, it's like, okay, what are we doing to stop the casualty rate?
Yes.
Right? Okay, and so are there ways that we can address the casualty rate? Well, I mean, that takes a big effort because we're saying the conditions within the classroom, the pay, the working conditions, just let me teach, preparation, feeling ready. One program that we focused, though, here, and we had great with Dr. Julian Vasquez-Helig and Dr. Laura Deinhardt from Western Michigan talking about the teacher apprentice program, which takes students and puts them full time into a classroom during the day, gives them wages while they're doing that. They take classes at night, but the state then pays tuition for the classes that they're taking so that the money they make is actually a salary. So they are literally getting paid to become a teacher, but they're spending 2 to 3 years in a classroom immersed in what it means to become a teacher. And the potential here is saying, is that type of preparation one of the ways that we might address retention? Because the deep preparation.
Yeah. You used a term for this earlier, too, that I really liked, which was the potential of like a teaching apprentice or a teaching journeyman. Right. And that and that practice, which still exists in places like Germany, takes somebody who's young but trying to learn and places them literally on the road meeting people who are better at that job than them. I absolutely believe that teaching assistants or this student teaching should much more model or should look much more like the journeyman model, where they're getting paid, they're getting hands-on time, and also the fate of a classroom is not left in their young hands, you know, early hands. Someone's there guiding them and helping.
And that's the exact term. It is a teacher apprenticeship that we're talking about. And there are right now 34 states that have some form of a registered teacher apprenticeship. And that is with the Department of Labor.
That's perfect.
That says, yeah, it truly is. They're like journeyman teachers, and they start and they do, you know, depending on the state and the requirements, but they do 2 to 3 years full time in a classroom working with master teachers, taking their coursework at night on weekends online, getting paid to do that work. But on this one too, the incentive here is that the tuition it would cost to get the coursework, to the states are picking up the tab on that tuition, and that's really starting to drive it. We don't have long-term retention data on this yet because, I mean, the first registered apprenticeship just got recognized in 2020. So we don't have apprentices out there that have been, you know, full-time classroom teachers for longer than 2 to 3 years. What the early indications from the teacher apprenticeship, which is asking those new teachers, how likely are you to leave? And they've been talking to them. They're indicating, going like, yeah, I don't see myself leaving. The deep preparation is that actually what happened. Can you imagine a 2 to 3 year apprenticeship? If they were going to quit, they were going to quit during that 1, 2, or 3 year apprenticeship. And if they made it through 3 years in an apprenticeship, they're like, I got this, man. And I figured it out. It's busted pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. Teacher shortages. How do we deal with them? Hey, I'm going to do a little bit more on that when we come back. 855-752-4842 is the number. And we're looking for your solution to the teacher shortages. Is it a teacher apprenticeship? Would you have done a teacher apprenticeship? Getting paid to become a teacher. Huh? Who would do that? Who would get paid to become a teacher? Give us a call when we get back. Whenever you see a flower at your feet bending at your direction, you should pick it up, but be gentle with it. Make sure the roots come out so you can transplant it and move it out. Hey, just, you know, it's busted pencils. It's a show about education, so a little education there. You see a flower bending your way, pick it gently, plant it somewhere else. Don't put it in a vase and kill it and then throw it out later. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Following up on the teacher shortage dilemma that's in Wisconsin, looking at a couple states that are trying to make a difference. Pennsylvania, $10,000 for what is the internship, which is called student teaching. And applications opened just this week, and 4,500 new applicants signed up to be a part of this. What I don't know, Anya, though, of this is going, of the 4,500 people that signed up, are these new people or are these like juniors who are about to student teach next year going, get me some of that money, you know, because if it's, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing, but it's not increasing the pipeline.
Right.
If you're doing that, it's incentivizing. And maybe what it might be doing is taking some people and going, yeah, I think I'm going to finish my teaching. However, we know in Wisconsin, the problem sometimes is not finishing. The problem is when they're finished, how do you get them to actually become a teacher?
Right. Right.
Okay. Teacher apprenticeship though. We did a lot of talk about that. 34 states. We have featured them on Busted Pencils. The first registered teacher apprenticeship was in Tennessee, Austin Peay State University, Clarksville, Montgomery County School District partnership there. We focused on them, talked about their apprenticeship program. We interviewed some teacher apprentices. And then just, I think it was 2 weeks ago when we had Western Michigan University, Julian Vasquez-Helig and Laura Deinhardt, they're talking about their Grow Your Own program in Michigan, which is a teacher apprenticeship. And I just found out today that we have 3 apprentices from the Western Michigan program that are going to be on Busted Pencils in the future talking about what it means. So if this sounds like a good program to you, we're going to be featuring some teacher apprentices. L.A. Tom, though, is on the line. What in the world? L.A. Tom, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, Tim. Hey, Anya.
Hey.
First off, we the people ultimately are the government. Everyone check your ballots. Get out and vote coming up in this election. Remember, we are the power that is there. And that means all of us. It doesn't just mean, you know, I'm for a democracy for everybody. So as long as we the people are the government, that means all of us. Second, I think what needs to be done in some ways is the opposite of what Scott Walker did to the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
He really devised his plan with Widow Hendricks. It's on YouTube. Anyone wants to go see it. He said he was going to develop a strategy called divide and conquer to make Wisconsin into a red state, because that's what Widow Hendricks asked him. How do we make Wisconsin into a red state? And he said, I'm going to devise a plan called divide and conquer. It was a hot mic moment. And and I think that he did that, honestly, just from someone that's from the rural areas of Wisconsin. He did it where he pitted the people with a non-college education with the people with a college education. And most of those people that were college educated were teachers.
Yep.
And I think that for some reason, he was able to make it where the teachers and the college educated people were like the elitist.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it where the person that was the plumber or the electrician or, you know, whatever they did in terms of a trades welder, mm-hmm. in terms of that, he divided them right up. And
yes,
I really think that you need the support from the community. You know, I mean, one of the greatest jobs in terms of actually being able to reach out to the community was being a teacher. I know my dad, when he was a teacher for the 30, 40 years that he was at Durand, he actually, you know, taught students of parents, you know, kids. I mean, it was like
generations.
A legacy. It was generations. Yeah. And his legacy, and everyone kind of knew who he was. Of course, he was also the football coach, but the thing was, you know, people knew who the teachers were. And I think that's changed. I don't think that that's there anymore.
Yeah, Tom, I mean, that is one of the things we've been talking about, particularly there is the length of people being in, you know, for the time there. So when you talk about your dad who's out there 30, 40 years, I mean, they become foundational to the community, and people do, they realize it. And we say, what is one of the best things we can provide students? And that's stability. Well, you know, nothing is more stable than, well, should be their teachers, because sometimes home isn't stable, sometimes community isn't stable. But as you said, in the past, when they went to school, school could be counted on to be that stability place. Except now, when you've got, you know, 40% of your teachers on the way out, that's not a good thing. So we're trying to address that. I do want to, though, Anya, you know, kind of put together, though, what L.A. Tom said with Scott Walker's divide and conquer. It was incredibly successful. You know, it was successful, and he really did somehow convince people that teachers, largely teachers, were the enemies. And it wasn't even so much with other people, but it was like it took people at the time and said, these people have jobs. You, the taxpayers, are paying their salaries. You don't have money. You're laid off. You don't have a job. Those teachers have jobs. They have jobs with benefits. You don't have benefits. Pointed out all those things and somehow managed to turn, instead of the people going, yo, Scott, thanks for pointing that out, when do we get ours? He was able to convince people to go, no, we're going to make sure that the teachers don't get theirs anymore. Right. I mean, and that was kind of the brilliance of that movement, to convince people who don't have, that the enemy was other people who do have, instead of saying, maybe the enemy is, why don't I have what they have?
Right.
And so, you know, and in fact, this was one of the starts to actually Busted Pencils. I don't know if I told you this origin story, but I had a fraternity brother at the time of Act 10, and I was at the Penn State campus at the time. I was just doing a little bit of fill-in talk radio, and my friend from Wisconsin, who was, you know, big radio person in the Madison area, said, "Hey, man, we got this Act 10 blowing up here, and I know you're an educator. Can you provide commentary?" And I would come on a Madison talk show in the mornings and say, you know, they'd come on and say, "Okay, what's happening now in Wisconsin is teachers are trying to hold on to their health insurance." And then, "Tim, what's this all about?" And I said, "Well, here's the interesting thing is that the people who don't have health insurance somehow have been convinced that they would be better off if other people lost their health insurance too."
Right.
And I said, that was the genius of something so ridiculously awful that you were literally cheering for. And this is what happens. So when people, you know, never fail to take advantage of a crisis or desperation or depression, right? People are depressed. And man, if you can find an enemy and point out and say, look what they have.
And how about an enemy that I think so many people felt they had at some point, which was like, yeah, I want to get back at that teacher who put me in timeout in third grade. So now that I'm a big, strong, you know, whatever I do for a job, let me get back at them. Yeah, I really want to highlight, as someone who was a student during Act 10, listening to this show and understanding from the adult perspective, people who were adults when this happened, I can't stress more clearly enough the amount of opportunity, lifelong opportunity, that Act 10 stripped from me personally and from my peers and from every generation that has come after us. I don't have strong enough radio safe words for Act 10 or for Scott Walker, but I just cannot overstate how much this choice to take away teachers' rights has affected the feeling in schools. And it's so clear, and the divide and conquer. I don't want to give Scott Walker too much credit for the brilliant strategy. I'll just say that anti-intellectualism is one of the best built wings of fascism. So this isn't a hallway he's walked alone, is all I'll say, you know.
Oh, we point that. I mean, Anya, tell me more though about that, because that's interesting. You're saying, like, as a student, you felt the effects of Act 10.
Yeah.
You know, because we're always talking about, tell me more about that. Like you could feel the demoralization of your teachers and that affected you. Give me some, you know, or
there is a moment I can see that is like a photo in my brain of one of my favorite teachers. And I just looked up the date of when Act 10 was signed, and I think maybe it was this day, of us standing outside in the snow and someone, I'll redact his name, but someone going, "Mr. So-and-so, my phone says that they did sign Act 10. And watching this gentleman who was always so stoic, always so good about teaching about history, but not imbuing it with his own personal views, watching him attempt to save face by not having a reaction, but seeing, I mean, genuinely seeing a light go out of his eyes, seeing a breath, a shoulder dropping. And I want to, again, without giving too much away, this was not a left-wing teacher. This was not somebody who I think probably, you know, was not a left-wing person. And I watched it take the gumption, the drive out of them. And I then proceeded to go to public school from 2011 to 2017, and met teachers who had already had that taken from them when that happened to them that day too. And that is so demoralizing to look at my life and go, where would I be? Where would I be without Act 10? I know I feel very strongly I and my peers would be better off. And that's so horrifying to think about.
That's such a powerful perspective that I really believe. I don't think that we've ever actually kind of considered. It's like, what was the impact and the effect on the students of Act 10 that witnessed that? And, you know, to witness and say, you know, see, I the way you described this, the stoic history teacher, but then to see the light in the eye go out. And if anybody has ever seen that happen to somebody, you know exactly what Anya's talking about. You can see it. It's like visible. You're like, what the heck just happened? Because you turned white. Everything went out from under you. You look like, you know, it's like you got that phone call that, you know, your most incredibly close loved one died.
Yeah.
And you can that's the impact that sometimes news has on people.
Yeah.
And Act 10 had that impact.
And I think it was for him like receiving news. I think the news that a close friend of his rights in his profession had died. And how do you continue to work in an industry that has just told you resoundingly your rights do not matter? And that's really hard. And that's not to say that I had so many wonderful, wonderful teachers for the rest of my schooling time. I just know that a lot of their energy had been taken out from them. And I would have otherwise, as a student, received that good energy, the time they had to put in or something of that note, you know?
Yeah. Boy, any great researchers out there? I know UW-Madison people, teacher education people listening to that. What a concept of research, you know, getting the kids of Act 10 and kind of doing a, you know, a reverse qualitative case study. Like, tell me about Act 10 and how it affected you. And boy, that would be very, very, very interesting. But oh, yeah. One of the other, though, when I talked about this at the time in 2011, I said I was a guest on Madison Talk Radio in the mornings. And, you know, I kept talking about this, saying, like, this is the time that, you know, people were saying, why should the teachers have the right to collectively bargain? Right. And I was like, well, this is one of those ones where it's like, shouldn't you want the ability to ask for, negotiate? And again, collective bargain doesn't mean you get what you ask for. It just means that you get to come to the table and talk. I'm like, so really you're mad at me because I have the ability to talk with my employer. Let's change this around. What do we do to get you to have the ability to negotiate with your employer? It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded. Hey, when we get back, let's do a little book banning before we take off. Back in a minute. Yeah, there it is. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. Producer Anya holding down the fort. Okay, got to check in with you. How are the nerves now, Anya?
Nerves have turned to rage now that I've been reminded of Act 10.
There we go. Yeah, you know, the best thing to do with anxiety is turn yourself angry.
Into anger.
You know?
Put it somewhere.
You don't need to feel calm and relaxed. You want to get rid of your anxiety?
Yep.
Turn up your anger, man.
Yeah.
Anger management. So we can put together anger therapy for anxiety.
Yeah, of course. Why would you want to meditate when you could go, like, throw something? I think that would be more therapeutic, but maybe that's just me.
We're going to have anger therapy then on Busted Pencils on Thursday nights, maybe, you know? So if you're out there and you get to say, like, man, my anxiety tonight, it's like, yeah, call Busted Pencils. We'll get you angry. We'll get you over that anxiety. Because, man, if you're checking out what is, though, happening in your schools, it really is. There's a full frontal attack on democracy. When the public schools are under attack the way they are, teacher shortage, teacher exodus, and we've been talking about that. And then the other point, book bans, the amount of book bans that have happened. Say the number of book bans rose sharply in fall of 2023, there were 4,349 book bans. The year before, 1,841. So the increase, book bans. People are saying, okay, what's a book ban? I don't even know what you're talking about, Tim. What do you mean they're banning books? They're banning like Mein Kampf and stuff like that? No, in fact, and I wouldn't support banning that. You know, it's available. You can grab it. We're talking about book bans that have really started off from what was called critical race theory, and books largely, you know, dealing with racism, racial minorities, and now other marginalized communities, LGBTQ communities, and then it has just gone full crazy where people have said, I don't want kids reading that book. I don't want kids reading that book. I don't want kids reading that book. And we were talking about, though, there are some states that have really tried to push this. We had this with Mrs. K that night about the freedom to read, the movement called Freedom to Read. I like the naming of that because I love taking freedom, because the reality is here, when you're talking about public schools and you're talking about learning, nothing is more essential than freedom.
Now, hold on, Tim. What you've just said is you love taking freedom.
Oh, I mean,
what you mean, sir, perhaps is taking the term freedom from those who actually want to take away freedom and saying, this is about freedom, baby. Let me help you here.
Thank you, producer Anya. My goodness, what would I do without you? Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. I was actually saying, it was like one of the things I notice is that I need to talk in fuller sentences sometimes but the problem is I think five sentences at a time.
I understand. I'm the same way.
Yeah, and so it's hard to pick which one I want to use sometimes. And a lot of times I try to get all five in throughout the same one sentence.
Yes.
And so, so you know what's happening. But so just coming out of this, though, so book bans impacting public schools have increased sharply in the 2023-24 school year. Schools saw the increase of roughly, about 60%. Book bans. Meanwhile, in Florida, this is a hint for tomorrow night. We're going to cover this. Florida is the book banning capital of the Americas, the United States of America. If you want to see what's going on, what's going wrong, you want to see every attack on public education, go to Florida. They're doing it. They've got, they've rolled out the red carpet for any attack on public schools. You're welcome to go to Florida if you're one of those attackers. Book bans, one of the first things that happened. Crazy Moms for Liberty that got their birth in the Florida area. That was their first move, was to get them on school boards and go into school board meetings and declare books that were on library shelves as pornography. And get you remember this, Anya?
And I remember very clearly a certain graphic novel about the Holocaust called Mao's being called pornography because it depicts men showering because it's talking about the Holocaust and, of course, showering in gas chambers. Yeah, that's for sure definitely pornography, Florida. Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it makes me so upset. Yes, I do remember.
Yeah, I mean, and that was it. And so that was the movement. So Moms for Liberty. And guess what? There are Moms for Liberty organizations in every state right now pushing book bans out there, and say Mao's is one of the most challenged books in any public school that's out there. It is always put up there, and it's just but most of the books too that were all it's like written by minorities, written by marginalized people, and usually about minorities or marginalized people. And so you start asking, it's like, okay, so are we banning books because they have material that is questionable, or are we banning books because you're kind of on the racist anti-gay side it feels to me like your book bans are kind of bullying and targeting people you don't like. I don't think it has anything to do with pornography.
No. And I'll say this as a former Sunday school teacher, if it was about let's not have books with sex or violence or anything, we wouldn't be allowed to have a copy of the Bible in schools. There is a lot in there that is hard to teach kids. I would know. I tried to do it. So maybe let's talk about content and not who wrote it or banning people. Yeah.
I love that example. I bring that up all the time for people. It's like, you want to ban a book? You want some controversy? You want sex?
Yeah.
You want deceit? You want violence?
Yeah.
You want graphic violence?
Drug use.
Drug use.
Forced drug use on others. Yeah. There's some dark stuff in there. And it's still the Bible.
Yeah, it's like, we ain't banning that book, Tim, because that's where the goodness comes from.
Here.
It's like, no, actually, most of the things that you are saying, maybe the Bible led to some of that. It's just weird.
It's almost like you have to learn about the dark stuff to learn about how to do things right, maybe. I don't know.
I tell you what, though, here's one of the there's, is this a silver lining? I don't know, but get yourself, write a book and get somebody to ban it And man, you are breaking it in right there. That is probably the best thing to happen too, is to become a challenged book. Because guess what? As soon as they say, oh, don't you read that book? It's like anytime, you know, you tell a first grader don't, and they automatically do, right? Guess what? You tell anybody no, and guess what happens? Yes, yes, yes. So when I get my next book out, my next ebook, I'm going to challenge the Busted Pencils listeners out there to get it on the banned list so that we can have lots of people. Thank you, producer Anya. Ah, it's Busted Pencil Thursday night. L.A. Tom, thanks for the call. Producer Anya, thanks for filling in.
I do my best.